on Beck and I when we were dating. We dated in high school, and my sister Mary Kay was a schizophrenic, and that happened as she got older in her life. But at Mary Kay's wedding, Kenny, who she would marry, is Polish, and so, you know, you have to do the who stole the kishpa. If you don't know that particular polka, they actually have kabasi in a thing, and they would throw it around. And during the middle of all that, you're supposed to polka. I thought it was kind of strange, but, you know, welcome to my family. We're strange, in case you didn't know that already. Anyway, they're doing the who stole the kishpa. And my dad, who grew up on Long Island, my dad loved to dance. He was a dancer. How many of you are dancers? Okay, we got two dancers here. The rest of us need to take lessons, it looks like. Anyway, so my dad, you know, his feet were just moving, just like flies or bees on a hot plate, you know. It was just moving. We get to the next song, and it's a waltz kind of thing. And so I am dancing with Beck, and my dad is dancing with my mom. Her name is Kate. And about halfway through, I pass Becky to my father, as would be Quigley traditions, and I say to my dad, and I say to Becky, "Becky, I just told my dad I proposed to you." And she's dancing with my dad. And my wife went, "Hoop!" And she couldn't move. She's just as stiff. "He did what?" And my dad was wonderful. He really is a good dancer. And he could lead you, if you haven't been in ballroom dancing, he could lead you by his left hand. And he would just twirl you around, and you were the star of the show, even if you had never danced. He was wonderful that way. And then just from my mom and dad, they moved from ballroom dancing to swing dancing. And then the high point of it all was square dancing. And when my mom and dad passed, they had a closet of square dancing stuff. And I thought, really? A guy from Long Island? And it was because my mom is from Nebraska. And so that's where all of that comes from. But I remember things that happened in my family. Do you all have that? Things? Have you ever gone through your wedding books? How many of you have gone through your wedding kind of pictures? Do you do that kind of stuff? My dad was so excited about taking pictures when we were kids. He had one of those cameras, and they were on that reel-to-reel thing that was going on. Anyway, put it all on CD, and it showed me as a little kid about as high as this chair with my cowboy hat on and my holsters and no front teeth. And so it's just kind of fun to remember, you know what? I really did do that. And the reason why I didn't have any front teeth is because I have four sisters. I was chasing my sisters through the house, and my one sister kind of darted right and then really moved left, and I kept going right, walked right into the wall, and knocked out my front teeth. There it is. And my mom, of course, said, not to my sister, "You shouldn't be doing that to him." She said, "Why did you do that?" Parents. You ever said as a parent some things you wish you hadn't said? Yeah, me too. We got all those. Anyway, what I want to do with you today is think about what happens here with Noah. It's really a wonderful story. Last week we had professional actors come, and they showed us a little bit of what it was like for them. But I'm now in chapter 7, if you want to look at it with me. And it says in chapter 7, in verse 11, in the 600th year of Noah's life, I don't know how long his actual life was. I don't know how he could live 600 years, but I'm here to tell you, I will not live 600 years, just in case you were wondering. Anyway, it says, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on that day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open, and the floodgates of the sky were opened, and the rain fell for 40 days and 40 nights. So from a geological point of view, what I need for you to have in your head is that there is water underneath us here. And that's what the scriptures would teach us. And if you don't know, I live in Stark County, and under Stark County is the largest clean water aquifer in the world. It's about 90 feet down. It's called the Muskingum Watershed. And it's a huge, it's the largest body of water underground in the world. It's huge. And I never realized that water was under us on dry land. But that is true all over the world. And it says, and the earth opened up and the water came up. And then it says, and the floodgates from heaven came down. So for 40 days and 40 nights, it rained on the earth. And it says, and I'm okay if you don't know if this happened in your head, but it covered all the earth. Now, you might say to me, Bill, how did that happen? And here's my answer. I have no idea. Okay, so good to have that sorted out, right? But it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. Have you ever been in a boat for more than a day fishing or something? Any of you ever sleep on a boat? It's not a good idea. There ain't a whole lot of sleep there. And then you get to see lunch over again because, you know, your stomach gets off. But there is this sense, right, in which, oh my goodness, 40 days. Except that it doesn't end there. He's on that boat another 110 days. Noah and his wife and their three boys and their wives are on that boat for a total of 150 days. That's a long time. We've got somebody here looking for somebody who...
Do you have a bathroom?
What's that?
Do you have a bathroom?
Yes, we do. Cheryl will help you get there.
Thank you.
You bet. I think somebody has a situation. Anyway, what we have here is Noah is on this boat for 150 days. Now, what I need for you to think about is, are any of you claustrophobic? You know, you can't be in tight spaces. That makes you nervous. You imagine being in this boat for 150 days. There's only one window, and it's at the top. There's no windows on the side. You ain't looking out your kitchen window every day looking for birds. There, none of that is going on. You're in this boat for 150 days. I'll bet you the rain stops and the people on that boat are thinking, okay, it's over. Only it's not. It's another 110 days. So have you ever asked the question of the Lord, how long do I have to wait? Are any of you good at waiting? Anybody patient? Have the gift of patience? She's got patience.
I try, but I'm bad at it.
I think that's a story, Maggie, for all of us. We all struggle with waiting, don't we? We all struggle with waiting. And you might say in your head, when is God going to do something? How many of you have asked God some questions like that? You know, I've been waiting a long time. And God, you know, you kind of picture those prayers going up to heaven and you kind of see God go, huh. Does he answer you or does he just say, huh? But I think one of the things that we notice in the scriptures is that God makes promises and then he doesn't do it in our time frame. It doesn't work out that way. So you have this sense of, when is God going to do something? When's God supposed to answer these prayers? And what I need for you to see, especially if you are in one of those seasons where you got something going on and you need God to act, God is doing stuff even though you don't know it. And for 110 days, if you read closely in the scriptures, it says, and God set upon the earth a wind. And that wind is Ruach. And it's the wind that would dry the water. But even though Noah and his family didn't know that was going on, God was at work. And so, borrowing a phrase from a sermon a couple years ago, here's the line: God's got this. Isn't that wonderful? So turn to your neighbor. Neighbor, God's got this. And those of you who heard that can say, well, I'm glad somebody does. But there is this sense, right, in which we struggle at times because we want certain things to happen and it doesn't happen in our time frame. And then we have to remind ourselves that God's got this. So there's a number of things that happen in this story with Noah that I want you to see the providence of God at work. And then I need for you to take that and apply it in your own life and start to say, you know, if God really does hold me in the palm of his hand, he knows what I need. And can you say to yourself, God's got this? Can you say that? Because it's really important. That's one of our life's lessons as we journey as believers, that God's got this. May not come in our time. Now, here's the other phrase from my black preachers. My friend Gary Martin, he'd say, but God is always on time. Always on time. Not my time, but he's always on time. And I would say that that is true for us as people. God knows what we need, but he needs for us to trust him. And so, again, we have this question of trust. Can you trust him when you have to wait? And it isn't easy. And I'd be naive to tell you you'll get through it without any concerns. No, we all have concerns. How many of you, like me, wrestle with being anxious? And yet the scriptures would say in Philippians 4, be anxious about, but in everything by, you know, prayer and with thanksgiving. Let your request be made known to God, and the peace of God, right, shall, you know, will pass all understanding. You know, I love that passage in, it's Acts 12, where Peter's in prison by Herod, and he has slipped through Herod's nest or net twice already. And this time Herod decides to chain him to guards. So picture him in this room chained to guards. And then there's two more guards out the door. And the guards are changing every 6 hours. Right around 10 o'clock. You can read it for yourselves. But I just think it's wonderful. Peter's like, you know, I got a big day tomorrow. I'm going to go to sleep. He's looking at getting killed. He's like, you know, I can't be staying up with you yahoos. You know, I got things to do. Isn't that wonderful? But Peter is not worried that he's going to be killed. And he goes to sleep. How many of you have been so anxious like I have that you can't sleep? And then if you could hear in your head, if you can say to yourself, God's got this. Do you know, in the middle of the Reformation with Martin Luther, was a Dominican priest over in Germany. And so he had read the scriptures. He had done the classwork. And he would get anxious. Well, what's going to happen? Because he was still a Dominican priest. God would take him outside. And he'd start to look at the stars. And God, in his head, he would be asking Martin Luther, who's keeping all the stars up in the heavens? Doing the dance of the heavenlies. And eventually Martin Luther realized, God's got this. One little side note with Martin Luther, if you didn't know it. He wrestled with seeing pretty girls over there in Germany. Imagine that, fellas, a guy wrestling with pretty girls in his head. He runs off with one of the nuns. He backs up the poop wagon from the barn, and she jumps in it out of a second story. And off they go. Here's Martin Luther, a Dominican priest, and this gal who was a nun jumping out of the convent into the wagon. And you can just see them going down the road. Isn't it wonderful when you actually hear the backstories to people's lives, the stories of people's lives? Oftentimes we think, oh, they had it easy. No, they didn't. Their lives were just as hard as yours and mine. Let's continue. But God remembers Noah. That's last week's sermon. Where's the sermon? Okay, we don't have that sermon there. I'm going to need somebody else's sermon notes. Luckily, Margaret's right here. Okay, so the word for remember is this word called zakar, and it is a key verse. The word remember seems to be an important thing for you and I. It's mentioned 73 times in the Old Testament via from Abraham, well, from Noah, and then Abraham, and then on through Joseph, and then into the story of Moses, and then into the to the kings and the judges, there's this word remember. We tend to have short memories. We forget stuff. Have you ever, as you've gotten older, went downstairs and said, why did I come down here? You ever say that? Me too. Now I'm starting to write notes, like sticky notes, and stick them on me. So when I go places, I go, oh yeah, that's what I'm here for. But it's this word remember. So in the what we have here is in the story of Noah, I'm in chapter 8, it says, first God caused a wind to pass over the earth and for the water to subside. There's two birds that are sent out from the boat. Do you remember what the two birds are?
Raven and a dove.
There's a raven. Why would he send a raven? Anybody know much about ravens? See ya.
Thank you.
It's always good to be friendly. But the thing about ravens is mariners would use ravens if they didn't have a compass or they didn't have a sextant. That's how you would know where you were going by the stars. They would let a raven out and then follow the raven because the raven would go to land. And so ancient mariners would always travel with a raven in a cage, and then when they would get lost, they would let the raven out and follow it. That's the work of the raven. The other thing about ravens is it feeds on carrion, so there would be a lot of dead animals, so the raven could basically function. But the other one is the dove. A dove and a pigeon are the same. I didn't know that. There are 300 kinds of pigeons and doves around the world. What do we know about doves? Pigeons. They always come home. And I didn't know that until this week. Hence the name homing pigeon. It's coming home. So in World War I and World War II, both Germans and England and France all had homing pigeons. And what would happen is they would actually tie a note to their leg. And then they'd send it off, and that pigeon would always go from where it had come from, and that's how they got messages back and forth, was homing pigeons. And in the Smithsonian, there is a dove or homing pigeon called Shari Ami, my friend. It's a homing pigeon that saved 193 French and American soldiers fighting against the Germans who were trapped. And this guy figured out he could put a note on a homing pigeon, send it, and it went to the people in charge of them and said, oh my goodness, they're stuck. That pigeon has been stuffed. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but it's stuffed and is in the Smithsonian. So next time you wander over there, you'll stop by and say hello to the pigeon. But homing pigeons, do you also know that the dove over the years has always been a symbol of peace, but it's the olive branch and the dove together. And that's in a number of international kinds of things, is the dove with an olive branch. And that idea comes right out of the story of Noah. That's where that comes from. Anyway, so we continue. The second one is that God actually calls Noah. Noah sat in that ark, even though he had sent out a raven, and then he'd sent out a dove. Noah sits in that ark until God says, come out. Bring all the living creatures with you out. And the thing that's fascinating is that Noah waits on God's leading. How many of you have wrestled at times with God's leading in your life? What am I supposed to do? And here is Noah waiting on this ark. It's been 150 days. That's a long time to be in a boat with all those animals, and yet he waited. Again, we come back to that theme of waiting for God to act on our behalf, or waiting for God to give us a clue as to what we're supposed to be doing. And I would say to all of us, you need to start to sort out God's leading in your life. And there's two ways that I would encourage you to think about God's leading. The one is to read the scriptures. It gives you a pretty clear roadmap of right and wrong. And it allows you to grow in your relationship with Christ so that by prayer, he can lead you. But if you aren't in prayer, he can't lead you because you're not listening. How many of you have, like me, wandered off and gotten lost and then say, God, how in the world did I get here? And you can almost hear God say, I've been asking the same thing. How did you get there? But there we are. We're human. And that's what happens with us. So God's leading. So I said there was two. The first is the scriptures. And the second one is the community of faith. You may not know this about Quakers or about the Friends traditions that go back 400 years. They would have a discerning committee. And if you were wrestling with who to marry, you were wrestling with a career path, they would get the elders together and they'd put you in the center and they would just ask questions. And then via the answers, they believed that they could help you discern God's will. That is very traditionally Quaker. And there isn't a church in the world doing that today. Isn't that interesting? There isn't a place for you as an individual to come and discern what God would have for you. And yet, that's a part of the tradition of the Friends Quaker movement, was a discerning committee. Fascinating, isn't it? So that's God's leading. Okay, so we jump from there. And then this last one, the first order of business, when Noah now comes out of the boat. I've got a new Bible. Have you ever had a new Bible and you can't find anything? That's what's going on with this one. Okay, I'm in chapter 8, I'm in verse 14. And in the second month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth was dry, and God spoke to Noah, go out of the ark, so we've done that, come out of the ark, and he says to them, breed and multiply, and be fruitful, and multiply on the earth. So what we have here is a second start, a new start for the human race. In golf, that silly game where people hit things and then go try to find what they hit, if you screw up badly, you get what is known in Gaelic as a mulligan. Mulligan is where you get to do it over. I've had a lot of mulligans over my time, but there's a mulligan, and here it is. God's giving the human race a mulligan. Start over. And he says, be fruitful and multiply. And the other crazy thing is God gives them all of the earth. So everything that those people, when they came out of the boat, everything they needed was given to them so that they could succeed. You know, marvelous to think, everything that you've needed has been given to you. It's God's gift. So what I need for you to begin to see, and we have talked about this before, is I believe that our relationship with God is a little bit like a dance, referring back to my dad going back and dancing with everybody. And if you all were to have shown up at one of my family's weddings and who stole the kishba, my dad would have danced with you. My dad didn't miss out on any female. He wanted to dance with everybody. But there's this dance of the human race with God above. And there is this wonderful sense in which God engages us and he encourages us to respond. So Noah gets off the boat. His first order of business is he has a sacrifice. He builds an altar. There was 2x2, and then the clean animals came in three pairs, and then one single one. So there were 7 of those animals. And I believe that the reason for them was for sacrifice. Now God gave them everything to eat, but the first order of business is that Abraham or Noah sacrifices and gives thanks to God above. His first response is to give thanks. So today on a crazy winter day, you are here. I'm hoping that you have already said thanks to God for different things. But I want to encourage you just with a little bit of things where we can popcorn it. What are things today that you are thankful for? And anybody can speak.
The air we breathe.
The air we breathe. Yeah.
Salvation.
Salvation, certainly. Yeah.
Mulligans.
Mulligans. We get to have do-overs. And the sun is out, yeah. So there's a good chance you're all going to be going home on dry asphalt. What I would have for you is become a group of people that can give thanks. When you wake up, the first order of business is to give thanks. Give thanks to God above for salvation, for the earth, for family, for friends. Or how many of you like me, you wake up and go, oh, another day. Goodness gracious. This is just the worst. I have all these problems. How many of you start out your day with problems? Instead of giving thanks for all that God has given. Because my guess is, if you start with problems, that's all you're going to see all day long. If you start out with thanks, you begin to see, yeah, I've got problems, but my problems are insignificant to the way God has blessed me. How do you want to start your day? How do you want to live your life? It's always amazing to me when I'm with people that don't know how to give thanks. Anyway, we continue. When there was dry land, I have this word here, it was Yabasha. And instantly, I thought of Fred Flintstone. And his phrase when he was having a good time was
yabba dabba
doo. And I thought, I wonder if he was Jewish. You know, that was taken. He was Jackie Gleason in that thing. That's who that was. Anyway, there is two implications that I would have for you. One is we have Noah's sacrifice, and that idea comes to us out of the New Testament, out of Romans 12:1, where it says, I beg you, my brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. So a large part of our understanding of sacrifice comes really here at the very root of the human mulligan, again, our new start, where Noah gives thanks and has a sacrifice. And you and I mean, I don't have sacrifices on my grill. I have burgers on my grill, but I don't, you know, have sacrifices. But the scriptures in the New Testament move beyond that, and it says our lives are the sacrifice. Our lives. Offer your lives as a sacrifice. And God, who has blessed you with everything, will continue to bless your life. But he asks, or Paul asks, for all of us to sacrifice our lives to his doing. And as you grow in your journey of faith, you will expand the things that you offer up to the Lord. Some of you have talked to Becky already today, and you know that last night, Kevin McKinley, that would be our daughter Carrie's husband, his dad died last night. And so all day, the Quigley family are sending text messages hither and yon, and everybody's trying to now be supportive. But there's a sense in which, have you done this? Where you have a child, you have a spouse, you have a parent, and all you can do is say, Lord, take them. They're yours. They've always been yours. I just thought I was in charge of their lives for a while. But they're really yours. And Lord, use me if I can be of some help. Isn't it interesting to know we move from being owners to being stewards? And we're stewards of each other's lives. You're steward of my life. I'm a steward of your life. And we try to encourage one another to be that sacrifice. Then we have one other thing that I would have for you, and it's this promise. God makes a promise in Genesis 9 to never destroy the earth again using water. And I don't know if you actually have ever read what the phrase is, but here it is. It's in Genesis 8:21. I will never again curse the ground because of humankind, for their inclination of the human heart is evil from youth. I will never again destroy every living creature as I have done. Genesis 8:21. And so God makes a promise to us and every living creature on this earth to never destroy again. It's a promise. And do you know, the promise is sealed by, do you know the story? It's sealed by a rainbow. And when you see the rainbow in the sky, and it reminds us, doesn't it? This was a sign. Do you know that the sign wasn't for you? The sign was to remind God that he made that promise. Isn't that interesting to think? So God had to have little memory things on his shirt too, little sticky tags, so that he would remember. But the reminder is the rainbow, that God will never again do that. Fascinating, isn't it? That God remembers. So now, here I'm going to take you down a little bit of a different path, but I need for you now to get into your head and let the Rolodex in that head move around a little bit. God has remembered you since before you were born. That comes out of Ephesians chapter 1. He wove you together in your mother's womb. That's Psalm 139. He has provided for you every step of the way, even though you didn't know he was doing that. Because you see, God has provided for you because he's got you in the very palm of his hand. Whether or not you acknowledged him or not. I love that song, he's got the whole world in his hands. Only I would say, he's got you in his hands. So here's these two quotes. This is from my wandering around, and I love these quotes. This is from the first one on the back page is a guy that I read. His name is Moltmann. He's from Germany. He said, the promise never again to destroy flesh because of its wickedness is an unconditional promise on God's part. It is God's indestructible yes to his creation. Indestructible yes to everything that you see. The history of nature with its changes and chances and the uncertain history of humanity both rest on the foundation of God's unconditional will. Natural catastrophes and human catastrophes of history cannot annul this divine yes to creation and to the human person. Not even human wickedness can thwart the Creator's will towards his creation. God remains true to the earth. He remains true to himself because he can't deny himself. God said yes to everything you see. Isn't that wonderful? And so as you drive home today and you see the trees that here in a month are going to start to bud. And this morning on my walk, I almost walked on a skunk. And I thought, you know, my wife said, if I ever get skunked, just take all your clothes off outside. I know that's not a great picture in your head, but it is what it is. Here's this other quote that I really like. Humans have a new start, a mulligan. Be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. You know, it's one of the few things that as human beings we've done pretty well. There's a lot of people on this piece of dirt, this globe, big marble. They are given all that they need to sustain their lives. To read the flood narrative with sensitivity to its original import is to acquire a renewed sense of the world we live in which we live as God's gift to us. As we see its destruction withheld only by God's patience and mercy, we find that the world we take for granted becomes once again the world continually granted to us by God's grace. Everything you have is by God's grace. And it's a gift. Everything you see is a gift. Everything you hear is a gift. Everything you eat and consume is a gift. The air you breathe and the water you drink, it's all a gift. And it was given because God decided to never again destroy this earth. And he's given it all to us. It's really wonderful. All right, we're going to sing one more song. Carla, what song do you want to sing? He is exalted. What a great song.
Did you hear about the mother worm and the father worm asked their daughter, where on this earth have you been?
Say it again.
All right.
I was looking at the
I know. Is exalted. Carla, do we have that one?
I appreciate that.
I can't get rid of the Bible.
Don't. It's okay.
Karen will never have bad eyes. I've always given her good exercises.
So you wonder, where does he get these?
I do too.
Anyway, Roy, come on over here. We'll sing this. If it comes up, not. If not, it's right here. It's like this.
He is exalted.
Came out. It's fun to sing even if we don't sing great, you know, it's still fun to sing. And some Sunday, I'm going to get some of you up there singing with me, so be practicing. Margaret's looking the other way. But, you know, God really is the greatest giver in our lives. Everything we have has come from Him. Father, we're grateful for this privilege we have to do this together. Thank you that you love us. Thank you that you have given us the earth and you have said yes to creation, even if at times we screw up. But I'm so grateful that we get a new start, a mulligan. Thank you that you love us. In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and God's people said together,
amen.
Be careful getting home.